I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Gary Bannerman joins us again to provide his take on the current provincial election and referendum campaigns. He is a journalist, broadcaster, and corporate communications consultant. From 1973 to 1988, he hosted CKNW's premier morning talk show. He's reported on a number of international stories as well, but his unique view of British Columbia's politics makes him a welcome guest today. He runs Bannerline Enterprises, which you can see online at bannerline.net. I was astonished to see that the last time he was on was for last campaign 4 years ago. I've got to do better than that. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Gary Bannerman. Good morning, Mr. Bannerman.
Hi, Joe. It seems like yesterday. I didn't realize it was that long ago either.
Yeah, we've got to have you on more often.
Nice to hear from you.
Yeah. Has BC politics changed much in the nearly 40 years that you've been on this side of the world?
I think it's changed a lot. I think it's a lot less lively. Arguably, it's more systematically managed, the government of the day, and less chaotic. But I don't think it's necessarily better. I think that we are less dynamic a society. There is rather the presumption today that government is a manager rather than a developer of the province, and in real truth, we're still virgin territory. There's a tremendous amount of development opportunity for the future. We should still have more of the pioneering spirit, in my view.
To current affairs now, John Van Dongen, the now former Solicitor General, he's resigned.
Yes.
Over his speeding problem.
Yes.
What's your sense on that? Do you think voters think about this? Will they be thinking about this when they go to the polls on the 12th?
I think so, but not in the forefront of whatever makes their decision. Strangely enough, there's an awful lot of little incidents that create a flutter of activity on a day-to-day basis, but I don't think they've had any profound impact on people's feeling about which party they're going to vote for. John Van Dongen, people who know him well, he's a really decent guy. He's a nice, hard-working, successful fellow, and probably a good minister. But I don't know how in his right mind he ever accepted the portfolio responsible for driver safety if he had this rather negative track record in his own driving. It's those sorts of things that they're more dumb than serious, and I think that the voter will see it that way.
Before all of this, the NDP, by everyone's estimation, had run a pretty poor campaign. Do you think this has improved their lot?
Well, it's given them something to talk about other than their own dreary perspective on what our future ought to be. I don't know that they necessarily ran a poor campaign. I just think that they have a rather poor presence in British Columbia at the moment. And that's not necessarily a criticism of Carol James. She's been a dedicated person. I know Carol. She was very effective as a leader in the school trustees province-wide before she went into provincial politics. I think she's a quality person, but she hasn't yet marshaled the strength around her, at least evidently the strength around her, that would excite the voters about any new directions in B.C. And one of the nightmarish problems that the NDP has from coast to coast now is essentially they're the Civil Service Union of Canada. The public sector unions run the Canadian Labour Congress. The industrial unions have very little to say about it. So essentially, the public service unions are trying to elect their own government. And I think just about everybody sees through that, and it makes the NDP cause more questionable than ever.
Now, you talked about Carol James and not having marshaled the people around her and sort of this campaign that would probably be better. But she's been leader for more than 4 years. What do you think went wrong there? Is she just not qualified?
No, I don't think so. I think that the party was in, after they went through 8 or 9 years of extreme difficulty, Mike Harcourt to Glenn Clark to Dan Miller, a great deal of uncertainty. A long period of time went by when all of the strongest and the best went in other directions. They didn't go into politics. They just basically moved away from the party core and left it to those who wanted to survive and take over. And she started with, albeit, 2 seats or something when you know, after the big, the first big Gordon Campbell victory, you know, there really wasn't much left. So they started building. Then they had the first election. You know, a number of seats were acquired to give them some substance in the last legislature. So it's taken a long time to get back, and they haven't yet reestablished an identity for the modern era, which, you know, doesn't get away from their roots, their left wing roots, left of center at least, in terms of trying to focus on the lowest common denominator in society and how to bring the bottom up and to have uniform services. The ideals of the NDP, there's nothing wrong with them, but yet they've got to be businesslike and be positioned for the modern era. And I don't think they've quite figured out how to do that yet. And so Carroll is in this situation of a brand without a real identity, trying to pretend they mean something other than yapping away at whatever they see the latest imbalances are in public service.
Now on to the Liberals.
Yes.
What do you think the public's perception of them is, notwithstanding this Van Dongen stuff?
I think, generally speaking, that people are comfortable that the government has been fairly well managed for a long period of time, is that the economy is in good hands, and that the government, which may annoy the heck out of you on a number of issues, they certainly annoy me on a lot of issues, generally speaking, have the ship of state going in the right direction. So I suspect the voters are probably unwilling to change. I think the bigger problem the Liberals have, though, is that the voters are really very apathetic. I don't think anybody cares about this election, quite frankly. I think, you know, one of the columnists last week said, let's hope there's no Canucks game on ops at the election day, because, you know, that's really where everybody's attention is focused right now, on the National Hockey League playoffs. That it's just ho-hum with provincial politics. Now, normally in most societies, that would be good news for the government. Governments start to worry when the opposition, when the masses are angry. You know, when they're mad, they're ready to vote, and governments are in trouble. So when everybody's apathetic, that's usually good news for a government. What it means, however, in B.C. is that the NDP historically gets their vote out. They work like hell. As I say, the public sector unions, it's big business for them. It's big business for the teachers. It's big business for these organizations whose livelihood come from left of center policies. So they will get their vote out. That's the history. And will the Liberals, in the face of this apathy, be able to get their vote out? So truly the election is really an election day transportation issue, as much as it is a motivational issue, as it is any of the matters that we're discussing in public.
What about this current government that annoys you?
Oh, where do I begin? The convention center, for example. Now, here we have a $900 million convention center. It's more over budget than the fast ferries ever were, yet the fast ferries, you would think it was second only to the Great Depression. You know, when you hear the complaints of the Liberal Party when they were in opposition. The convention center, which I've always supported, we definitely need more convention space. They built the wrong center in the wrong place for twice as much money, and it's going to be the greatest white elephant that British Columbia has ever developed. But nobody believes that now, because they keep issuing press releases about all these dozens of conventions that they've got booked. They would have had dozens of conventions booked in the old center without the new one. Is they needed to really double the size of the old one and build an international congress center rather than an exhibition hall, which is what essentially they've built. We are never going to get the massive industrial conventions that need these cavernous spaces that exist in Las Vegas and Chicago and Orlando. We're never going to get those. Those are American congresses anyway. We'll get maybe one every 10 years. The kind we can get are the kind that go to Geneva and go to Germany. We need the kind that bring the intelligentsia, the academics, the doctors, the professionals. These are the ones that come anyway, and we can be one of the great, great congress centers in the world. But that requires a different kind of facility than the one they built. There's one issue. It was, in fact, all the discussion about BC Rail and this court case and Pat Kinsella and all of these things. That's not the issue. The real issue is they shouldn't have sold the railway in the first place. They've sold, you know, one of the vital tools that W.A.C. Bennett meticulously put together to help build British Columbia, to using BC Ferries, BC Rail, and BC Hydro as as public enterprises that could help the economy develop in the hinterlands of British Columbia. BC always had the ace cards in any negotiation with Ottawa, any negotiation with major corporations, any negotiation with the United States. We don't now, that we basically are a consulting service. There's probably a dozen more if I thought about it, but those are just two.
Well, let's talk about Patrick Kinsella.
Okay.
And this issue here. It just seems sleazy, doesn't it?
I beg your pardon?
It does seem sleazy, his connection.
It certainly does.
Yeah, now do you think voters think the same way, or do they know?
Well, voters are, I think voters tend to be disdainful of anything to do with the machinery of politics. Yet, oddly enough, if you look at the great success of the Obama campaign, two of Barack's key people, David Axelrod from his old Illinois roots, and more recently David Plouffe, are now viewed as heroes because they engineered the back room to help Barack Obama become President of the United States. They're brilliant. Well, Pat Kinsella is of that ilk, and he's a very, very talented backroom politician, maybe the most talented that we've ever had in British Columbia. But the public tends to view this kind of backroom machinations as somehow evil. And it can be. You know, if it jumps the gap from being working for the political party to help it get elected and starts influence peddling, then indeed it can be very evil indeed. The governor of Illinois is facing criminal charges for that kind of activity. Well, there's people in the back room that do that too. The situation with Pat is that, again, it's in a sense, as I said about Van Dongen, I suspect that the truth is that it's a lot more dumb than it is serious. And I find it hilarious in a sense because Pat is one of the brightest guys that have ever worked in BC politics. He's really smart. And to allow himself to get into this kind of a pickle, to me, is extremely amusing. It's one of those physicians heal thyself sort of situations. He's fallen on his own sword. Now, some of the accusations that are made against him, that he was taking money both from CN and from BC Rail at the same time. Well, I've been a consultant mostly for the last 20 years, too, and I've had situations where a client I've had for several years hasn't been a client for 3 or 4 years. Now I've got a new client, and all of a sudden the new client is starting to do business with the old client, and because I know all the principals on both sides of the table, I end up being the go-between to help bring the old client to do a deal with the new client. If somebody looks at it as if it's some monolithic situation that happened all at once, it may appear that I've been fed by both sides of the table. That may well be the case with Pat. I mean, he certainly knew David McLean. Anybody that's been prominent in Vancouver business knows, and most people respect David McLean, who was the chairman of CN, and he was on retainer from BC Rail. I think it's very questionable, though, that BC Rail, a crown corporation, would retain the campaign chairman of the Liberal Party and pay him a fee. I think that stinks to high heaven. I really do think that the political guy from government shouldn't really be retained by an instrument of government. So I think that's wrong. And I think the whole BC Rail sale to CN stinks anyway. And, obviously there's a criminal case going that's going to ascertain how smelly it really is, but I think it's really quite smelly. But I don't think that when all the truth is in, you're going to find that Pat Kinsella, was party to the most worrisome aspects of it, possibly a mistake of judgment on his part. And the other thing that I find, extremely amusing is Pat and his associate Mark Giles, who have said publicly that they aren't a lobbyist. Well, believe me, if they aren't lobbyists, there isn't such a thing. There's no question about it. That's really all they do, is they interface between clients and their dealings with government. And if that is done properly, it's a very worthwhile function, because governments don't really understand the machinery. I'm sorry, the private sector doesn't always understand the machinery of government very well, and civil servants often don't understand the ethic and the culture of corporate business. So somebody in the middle can be a useful person, as long as everybody's ethics are in the right place.
Back to the sense of disengagement that you've noticed, that we've all noticed over this campaign, you'd think that the economy and the state that it's in would motivate people to vote. Well, what do you think happened here?
Well, they may vote. You know, maybe they're more motivated than I think they are. No, I just don't think anybody believes there's going to be a change of government. You know, so I don't think anybody feel, you know, those that are inclined to support the current government that don't want to change, I don't think they see the NDP as much of a threat, you know. So that's usually a worrisome thing if you're the government, you know, because you really have to motivate your voters to get out and support them. But I just don't think that anybody. I think they feel threatened in terms of the economy, but you know, I don't think they feel that that there's more the government can do. I mean, they're talking about pumping lots of money, lots of construction. The Olympics are coming. The highways projects are getting completed. A lot has been done there. There's new infrastructure going ahead. And it's all debt, you know, right now. So I don't think anybody sees in the message of the NDP that that's going to generate any more dollars to solve this economic problem. So I think thus the lethargy. I think there's a frustration and a feeling of futility among the public now. I mean, a futility not just about government and society, but a futility about how each of us can do more in the face of this global situation that's overwhelming.
Do you have a position on STV?
I find it very interesting. I definitely will vote against it, but it's not something that is puts a fire in my belly. The reason I think first past the post works is that you end up with a government with a clear majority. The first past the post, while it's got many, many attractive features, the attractive being that a minority party, let's use the Green Party for example, if they went out and got 15% of the votes, they would likely get some representation in the provincial legislature. And if you've got one voter in seven, my heavens, you deserve some representation. So that's the argument in favor of it. The argument against is that we end up with political chaos, just too many splinter parties, too much confusion, too difficult for a government to operate, to be a strong government. So I tend to think that it turns an election into more of an entertaining spectacle than it does something practical to navigate society. But as I say, I don't feel strongly about it, in the sense that if it happens, I think it would be an interesting experiment. And now it's just theory, you know, unless you really saw it in action. Now, we haven't seen it in action until since the first election of W.A.C. Bennett. And W.A.C. Bennett likely never would have got into government without the single transferable ballot. And once he got in it and consolidated a majority, he had a rethink. I mean, I talked to him about it, you know, and it's very easy to cynically saying the, you know, once he had power, they didn't need this device anymore, so he got rid of it just to solidify his own power. But I talked to him very rationally about it, and you know, he said the circumstances were such in the 50s that were in the 40s that were quite different, that we had gone through the war with a very difficult coalition government between the liberals and the conservatives, and most of the liberals didn't like each other, and most of the conservatives didn't like each other either. And there was this splinter group of SOCREDs, and there was a splinter, well, the NDP or the CCF at the time were, you know, were influential too. So the whole society was fractured anyway. So, in a sense, he thought in that era it was a chance that if all of the politicians were fighting each other tooth and nail, why don't we let the public have a vote on which one of this cast of thousands they liked the best? So he just thought it was a unique situation and there wasn't a need for it anymore.
Will you ever write a memoir, Gary?
In bits and pieces, I don't know. You know, the I've thought it'd be a very nice thing to do, but I've done several books in my life, lots of them actually, and it's so hard, you know, it's so hard to find a market for any book, unless it's an international bestseller. Even national books in Canada don't sell very much. You know, you get a bestseller in Canada in hardcover is 4,000 or 5,000 books. Well, that's coast to coast in the country. And so unless you get a topic that really resonates with people, or indeed if you're funded by, you know, some kind of a research grant or Canada Council, if your memoirs are thought to be, you know, so valuable to anybody, then there might be justification to do it. But if I did it, it wouldn't be with any real any realistic expectation of getting compensated for my time. It would be something that I enjoyed doing and would like to do, but I think I'd have to have my life more at peace than it is at the moment. I'm too busy with my professional pursuits.
Yeah, and you've been well otherwise?
Absolutely. Yeah, nonstop and busy.
You're very good to do this, and I appreciate it. It's been great talking to you again, Gary.
Yeah, anytime.
We should do this more often. Bannerline Enterprises is Gary's company. Bannerline.net is his website. Gary Bannerman on the line. I'm Joseph Plenum.